Vatican to advocate freedom of conscience. What the Catholics have to believe is one religion as good as another. What did Vatican II really teach? Welcome to EWTN's Vatican II Documents. I'm Father Regis Scanlon. I am a Capuchin Franciscan from Denver, Colorado. Today we will begin talking about Gaudium et Spes, okay? This is the pastoral constitution of the Church in the modern world. And we hope they answer the question, how is society or our world developing today? Now, the Vatican II document, Gaudium et Spes, is titled in English, as I said, the pastoral constitution of the Church in the modern world. That's different from the dogmatic constitution of the Church. Now, if you have the Flannery edition of this document, you will note that there's a footnote to this very title. The footnote reminds us that while this is not a dogmatic document, okay, reminds us that it's not a dogmatic document. The footnote states this, quote, "The Constitution is called pastoral because while resting on doctrinal principles, it seeks to set forth the relation of the Church to the world and to men of today," unquote. So, the document contains both unchangeable elements, that's dogma, and changeable elements, the application of the dogma to the various changing circumstances and situations of our day. So but just because it's not a dogmatic document doesn't mean that it's optional. We have to assent, we have to embrace, accept all of its teachings with docility, but we have to keep in mind that it's possible for a pope to change one of the teachings in this document if he so chooses, but the Pope and only the Pope can do that. We have to assent with our minds and hearts until he would change one of those teachings. Now, in the preface of Gaudium et Spes, the Second Vatican Council explains the purpose of this document. The Council says that the Church wants to enter into dialogue with the people of the world, Christians and non-Christians, about the joys, the hopes and the sorrows, and the problems facing modern man today. The Church wants to offer man assistance in solving his problems. And the Church believes that it can do this from the resources that it has received from our Lord Jesus Christ. And in the introduction to Gaudium et Spes, the Council states that it realizes that man is filled with both hope and anguish. For our age is one in which there are critical and swift upheavals occurring in society, which spread to the far corners of the earth. One is just to consider the recent changes in the stock market to realize that. There are social and cultural transformations which affect every facet of life today, even people's practice of religion, which I would say is getting pretty gloomy in both Europe and the United States. In fact, it's interesting, the developing countries is where the practice of religion seems to be falling off. The poor countries, like India and Africa, and so forth, the practice of religion in South America, the practice of religion is still strong. But the wealth seems to be, the materialism seems to be taking our minds off of heaven. I would say then that the practice of religion today has rather become sluggish, if not dead, in many countries. Today man seems more uncertain of himself as he faces these changes. Never has mankind had so much wealth, and yet never has so many people been starving. It's really strange. You know, in Kansas, the breadbasket of the world, they paid farmers to let their lands fallow. They don't, to keep them from growing wheat so that they can control the wheat price. And there's people starving all over the world. I'm not blaming the Kansas farmers. It's the whole picture, you know, the economy and everything. It's sad. It's become quite clear to me also as I traveled through Africa and Madagascar. And when I went through there, it was quite clear to me that the United States, Americans, are the richer people of the world, okay? Even the poor people over here seem to be okay compared to the poor people over in the other countries. Never before has man been so conscious also of the importance of freedom. Yet man is always being faced today with new kinds of slaveries, huh? Drinking, drugs, sex, gambling, all kind of materialism. With all the progress in the technology, man seems to be unable also to do away with strife in society. Huh? With all of our intelligent people, with all of our great diplomats, we can't, you've got wars occurring all over the globe. Huh? Palestinian Israelis, you've got Bosnia and Herzegovina, you've got the Irish problem, you know, the Irish fighting, Ulster and Catholics, and you've got, Africa, the various tribes. It's terrible. And yet, you know, isn't it strange? We got all this education, all these great diplomats. Huh? They have great degrees of international diplomacy, and they can't do anything about it. It's strange, you know? So we're really living. We have many questions today. With all of our progress in technology, we seem to be able to do away with political, social, and economic hostility. You know, it's just not... What is worse? What is worse? The advances in science and technology seem to be recoiling upon our own heads. You know? We use our great knowledge in science and technology with all these experiments, okay? Nuclear power and everything. Now it seems that it's starting to fall upon our own heads. We have to live under the threat of total war, nuclear war, destructive war. Now, our own technology seems to be turning on us, you know, scaring the heck out of us. So it seems that while there's rapid progress in material development in society, this seems to be no parallel development spiritually, okay? We're getting more wicked, getting more powerful, but getting more wicked. Today we are witnessing deep-seated changes in the social order and attitudes, morals, and the religion of peoples. Society is developing at a rapid rate, and the development of technology and the media only serves to accelerate it. The human race is beginning to forecast its population growth, they're starting to consider how they can control this. And the acceleration of history is going at such a rapid pace you can hardly keep abreast with it. You know, things change so fast, just like that. What took 100 years to happen can happen in a year today. And people today are very conscious, you know, of the injustices and imbalances of the world. Television has made it that way. You can sit in your home, and all of a sudden, right before you, you can see people, you know, killing the poor, people slaughtering other people. And that builds tensions all over the world, and our own hearts, too. So you have this rage, this tension mounting throughout the world. You have imbalances in economy, and we become quite aware of these imbalances in economy because of the television. There's conflicts between social classes. There's conflicts based on race and sex, social classes, the rich and poor. Now, but there is also amongst all this, there is surfacing, strangely enough, among peoples, a desire to set things right. You keep injustice. You keep hearing this voice. And you can see it in the people, even to the people that are doing these things. They wish so much that there would be balance of justice in the world. The council says, Second Vatican Council says, in Gaudium et Spes, in this document, in number 9, it says this, quote, great numbers of people are acutely conscious of being deprived of the world's goods through injustice and unfair distribution and are vehemently demanding their share of them, unquote. I would underline that vehemently. Now, okay? It's these imbalances in unfair distribution of wealth and property. But people today believe that the cultural benefits are for everybody and should be available to all. Once more, they are not afraid to voice their opinions publicly and even go into action. Okay. So according to the council, quote, among the nations there was a growing movement to set up a worldwide community in an attempt to answer this need. We call it the global village. The world is shrinking. We're depending upon one another economically, politically, and what we don't understand is we depend upon one another spiritually too. So from this we can see a world that is at once powerful and weak, capable of doing noble and great deeds like relief services to earthquake victims, things like that. It's remarkable good things that people do. But we're also capable of doing what is evil and base, huh? Like the murder and rape of 100,000 women in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Good grief. The world seems disposed to freedom and slavery, progress and decline, brotherhood and hatred. The modern dilemma seems to be the man has become quite conscious that the forces he has unleashed are in his own hands, and that it's up to him to control them or to be enslaved by them. So it is to this world that the Second Vatican Council brings the knowledge and power of Christ. The Council knows that all of man's yearnings come basically from desires deep within his heart, within himself, as he's created by God. The Council also knows that man's deep-seated questions are really questions about himself, you know, about his destiny as a human being. The Council states this, quote, "The Church likewise believes that the key, the center and purpose of the whole of man's history is to be found in its Lord and Master, in Jesus Christ," end quote. Thus the Council says, quote, "The Council proposes to speak to all men in order to unfold the mystery that is in man and to cooperate in tackling the main problems facing the world today. This is the purpose of the Second Vatican Council document, Gaudium et Spes, which really means joy and hope, a very optimistic view of the future." Now, how does the Vatican Council, how does the Council using this document intend to help the modern world? Tends to instruct them on the teaching of man, on the teaching of conscience, things like that. And so, then man has to explain the mystery of man to man. That's what the Council wants to do. So the Council thought that man, if you read the document, it's thought that man is created, okay, by God, male and female, in the image of God. Once more, man was created free and good, since he was made into God's image and likeness. But then, through the instigation of the devil, man abused his freedom and sinned through his own free will. Now, man desires to obey God, but he is inclined to use created things for his own selfishness. He has broken the right order that should reign within himself. And consequently, he is disordered in his relationship with his Creator and all creation. Once more, man finds that he is unable of himself to overcome the assaults of the evil one successfully. And therefore, a man must turn to God, who alone can help him as his Savior. This is the religious message the Council presents to the modern world, the modern man. Now, the Council teaches that man differs from other animals, okay? I know there are people today that don't believe that. They would probably chop me up and feed me to save the whales or something. But the Council teaches that there's a difference. Man is different from all other creatures because man has an intellect. And the intellect is man's greatest power, the Council says, and his greatest dignity. And it's precisely the intellect where you find the conscience, because the conscience is the practical conclusion of the intellect. Now listen to what the Council says about conscience. There's a beautiful thing about conscience. Quote, "Deep within his conscience, man discovers a law which he has not laid upon himself, but which he must obey. It's a voice ever calling him to love and to do what is good and to avoid evil, tells him inwardly at the right moment, do this, shun that. For man has in his heart a law inscribed by God. His dignity lies in observing this law, and by it he will be judged. His conscience is man's most secret core and his sanctuary. There he is along with God, whose voice echoes in his depths," unquote. That's beautiful, isn't it? That's in number 16. Number 16 in Gaudium et Spes. The Council points out that man must be guided in his actions by his conscience. Man is not like an animal, just follows feelings, you know, and does what he feels like doing. Man, the human being, man and woman, must follow their conscience and be guided by their as they guide their actions. However, the council points out something which we don't often hear discussed in relation to conscience. The council says that man's conscience is frequently not formed correctly and consequently in error. Listen, in number 16, Gaudium et Spes, what the council says, quote, "Yet it often happens that conscience goes astray through ignorance, which it is unable to avoid, without thereby losing its dignity. This cannot be said of the man who takes little trouble to find out what is true and good, or when conscience is by degrees almost blinded through the habit of committing sin," unquote. So the council makes a clear distinction between three classes of people, if you read this very carefully. First of all, there are those whose conscience goes astray through ignorance. These people do not know what they are doing is wrong. And perhaps they have not yet heard the church's teachings about good and evil. They have not yet heard the gospel. It has not been preached to them, nor have they understood it. We say these people were invincibly ignorant. There's no way they can overcome their ignorance. Somebody has to help them. So they are not sinning. Their conscience still has great dignity. But there's a second group. There are those who do not trouble to find out what is right and wrong. They do not want to know what the church really teaches about good and evil. These people, we say, are invincibly ignorant. Their ignorance could be overcome if they sincerely tried to find the truth. Perhaps they could even find out what the church teaches. These people are sinning. Okay? They are running away from the truth. Third class, there are those who know what is good and evil. Perhaps they've even read the documents of the church. They know what the church teaches about good and evil. And they choose not to believe it. Jesus told his disciples when he sent them to preach, quote, "He who hears you, hears me. He who rejects you, rejects me. And he who rejects me, rejects him who sent me," unquote. Luke 10:16. This third class of people, therefore, come under the judgment of Jesus Christ, who said to Nicodemus that, quote, "Whoever does not believe is already condemned for not believing the name of God's only Son," unquote, John 3:18. These people who know the church's teachings and choose not to believe it, these people's consciences become blind for not following Jesus, and they can no longer distinguish right from wrong, the left hand from the right, morally. These people are in a bad way. They're heading downward towards eternal punishment. Now, it is only the first group that is excused from guilt before God. It's only the first group whose consciences do not lose their dignity. Okay? The second and third groups will be judged, as I said, by Almighty God for not using their conscience in a responsible manner. Now, the conscience also points out, the council also points out, the great gift of freedom. It's only in freedom the man can turn himself to what is good. But this gift of freedom must be used responsibly. The council states this, quote, "The people of our time prize freedom very highly and strive eagerly for it. In this they are right. Yet they often cherish it improperly, as if it gave them leave to do anything they like, even when it is evil," unquote. So you cannot use conscience or freedom as an excuse to doing evil. The Second Vatican Council, Gaudium et Spes, their doctrine, teaches that very clearly. So one's conscience is not absolute. The person must be willing to correct his conscience and form it according to what is true, to form it according to the teachings of the church, and then to follow it. In number 53 of Gaudium et Spes, for example, when the council deals with the question of marriage and the regulation of birth, the council states very clearly, quote, it says, quote, "The sons of the church are forbidden to use methods disapproved by the teaching authority of the church in its interpretation of the divine law." The council concludes, quote, "Before the judgment seat of God, an account of his own life will be rendered to each one according as he has done either good or evil," unquote. And God knows what is in man's conscience. Now, the council says that man finds himself today filled with doubt when confronted by death. It's a scary situation, and most people don't like to talk about it. When man is tempted to give in to the appearance of an end of life, he's tempted to say that there's nothing after this life. Yet there's something within man that causes him to rebel against death. and the idea that he will cease to exist as a person. Man struggles to confirm his hope for a future existence, but it is only in faith in God and the teaching of Jesus Christ about the resurrection that gives man peace. Only that. Only there can he find certainty and hope for an everlasting life. Now, the Council states that the dignity of man is primarily founded upon the fact that he is called to communion with God. Yet many today do not perceive or they reject this vital link between man and God. It is certain that atheism is one of the most serious problems of our times. It's certain, and it appears to be growing. Now, the Council says that there are many forms of atheism, just as there are many claims that people make for not believing in God. Some do not believe God because they are angry over the way they've been treated, or because what they have seen others treated in this life. Some are due to false philosophies. There can be many reasons, but we Christians have to realize that one of the reasons why atheism exists is because the poor example of Christians. We don't live up to what we claim we do as Christians. Listen to what the Council says. Quote, believers can thus have more than a little to do with the rise of atheism to the extent that they are careless about their instructions in the faith or present its teachings falsely or even fail in their religious, moral, or social life. They must be said to conceal rather than to reveal the true nature of God and of religion. So you can see we can have a lot to do with the spread of atheism ourselves. So in many of these ways which I've just been presenting are examples of how the Council wants the Christians to go out with the Catholics, get in dialogue with the world so that we can help the world and help the world along the way of truth to keep it from going off the deep end. The only difficulty is things have happened since the Council 30-some years ago. Remember that the Council stated that history is changing so fast that one can hardly keep abreast of it. One must keep in mind, as I said, that the Council was held 30 years ago. An awful lot has happened since. All that the Council stated can now be seen from hindsight. And yes, the Council was right on target. The Holy Spirit was there directing us. But unfortunately, the world did not listen to the Second Vatican Council. Didn't listen to its teaching about man. Secular society and even many in the church did not follow the advice of the fathers in Gaudium et Spes. They did not recognize that their consciences were given to them by God as a guide to happiness in this world and in the next. They did not seek the truth and try to form their consciences according to the teachings of the church. But the reason that the world did not listen to the Second Vatican Council's teachings on man in the modern world is because Catholics did not do what the Second Vatican Council asked them to do. Catholics did not engage the modern world in dialogue about the rights of the family, about reproductive rights, about a just and fair economy, about freedom of religion and freedom of conscience, about freedom in communication, about the differences between a just war and an unjust war, about the land and ownership and rights of the poor, about the evils of slavery, about pornography, about the abuse of women. True, the Pope did, but I'm talking about the Catholics as a whole. We didn't do it. So now, a fact which must be faced today is that the world has not gotten better since Vatican II in 1965 and its teaching in Gaudium et Spes. It's gotten much worse. In fact, we all know that the future of the world, the future of humanity, passes by way of the family. But listen to what John Paul II says about the family. He says that today, he says, the family is thus morally wounded and profaned in its nature as a community of love, its vocation as a sanctuary of life. And he says that, quote, we are facing an enormous and dramatic clash between good and evil, between the culture of death and the culture of life. He says the number of abortions infanticides today indicates that the world has reverted to a state of barbarism, which one hoped had been left behind forever. He says all of this in Evangelium Vitae, his encyclical. Now, he says, in fact, we are facing an immense threat to life, not only to the life of individuals, but also to civilization itself. So here we have, after all this time, and not listening to the Vatican Council, we find ourselves today with a threat against civilization itself. And brothers and sisters, we must wake up. We must wake up. We must turn to the Second Vatican Council's teachings and begin to implant these teachings to save the world. It's not too late. God will help us. I'd like to thank you for being with us today. And I'd like to invite you next time. And we'll ask the question, should Catholics participate in society or not? It's getting dangerous out there. So join us and we'll discuss that question. And Gaudium et Spes once again. God bless you.